21 and a half minutes after the hour. It is a Tuesday morning, and therefore, Dr. Don Clark used to. Yeah, we look forward to these conversations every Tuesday morning when we talk about, well, science and creation and faith and, in this case, ethics and DNA. This is a pretty heavy-duty topic today, Don. We're going to lean heavily on you. Don is a biochemist and a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and I was going to say genius.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, I don't know.
No.
I think you rank right up there. Anybody who could decipher CRISPR, the C, it's capital letters, C-R-I-S-P-R, that kind of launches our discussion this morning. And tell us, what, and I guess that's how you say it, CRISPR. What is it, and why is it important?
Well, CRISPR actually stands for clustered, regular, interspaced, short, palindromic repeats.
Wait a minute. Let me write that down.
Got it. All right, now I understand. Okay, all right, good.
Yeah, that should make it clear as mud. But okay, so here it's actually a DNA sequence that comes from a virus that has infected a bacteria. It's a short DNA sequence, and it's a repeating sequence. What it does for the bacteria, actually, if the virus didn't kill the bacteria, then it kind of leaves this, sometimes it leaves this CRISPR sequence of DNA, and then that can be used to actually destroy other viruses that might infect the bacteria. So it imparts immunity on, if you will, in quotes, to the bacteria, so it can be immune to similar viruses that might attack the specific bacteria.
So this is the bacteria's way of defending itself.
Well, it's a way the virus uses to try to attack the bacteria.
Oh.
The bacteria then kind of fights back, and then the bacteria wins in this case. And then subsequent viruses that try to attack the bacteria get chewed up, if you will, by the CRISPR complex.
Now, here's an even tougher question, maybe. How do scientists determine this stuff? Is this watching bacteria and virus under a microscope? Can they see this, or is this theoretical? I mean, it must work. They must determine that it's real, it's physical, I can see how this works, and then they make use of it somehow. Now, but you know, that's an area of research I know nothing about. How do you do that?
Yeah, and this this actually goes back a number of years when it was discovered. But obviously, you had to have the technology to be able to sequence DNA in order to figure out what's going on here. But they noticed that certain bacteria were resistant to certain viruses, and when they investigated, they found this CRISPR complex, if you will, they discovered that, here's what the complex does, and it actually binds to the RNA of an attacking virus and then cuts it, and they said, well, that could be useful for gene manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we see if we can't use it to manipulate genes, to cut genes at specific places, and then we can, once we have the gene, or in this case the DNA cut, then we can insert whatever we want, or we can cut out whatever we don't want. So that's where we start with this program today.
It's kind of DNR surgery, isn't it?
Yeah, it's scissors, but it's very specific scissors, and it cuts the DNA at very specific spots. And so what some scientists have been doing lately is trying to manipulate embryos, human embryos, and try to cut out defective genes and insert, good genes, if you will.
Hmm.
Was this used in Jurassic Park? Was this you remember the theory back in one of the most interesting parts of the movie was they found DNA from dinosaurs and eggs, but it was missing some pieces, so they used frog DNA and kind of inserted it in the gaps.
Well, they didn't tell you what the technology was because they didn't know what the technology was for the movie.
And they didn't have it.
It's essentially kind of the same thing. You know, but it's a method that's trying to be used, for example, to correct some genetic defects. So one scientist over in China, people may remember a Chinese scientist by the name of Dr. He. Actually did this with some human embryos, and then after he genetically modified the embryos, he allowed the embryos to be, implanted in women, of course, and then they gave birth to a baby, and people got all up in arms because, whoa, we got genetic modification going on of the human genome. And this guy actually wound up losing his job over it at the Southern University of Science and Technology in China. And so people were upset with him that, one, he did the experiment in the first place, but two, that he actually brought the embryo, then be the fetus and fully developed human. And so there was a kind of a public outcry over it. And so the fellow lost his job.
So we have at least one GMO kid out there.
Yes, exactly. And I haven't followed it to see, what the result was and what the modification was.
His work should have made, perhaps, I think, that what embryo he selected had a predisposition toward a certain disease, which he tried to fix with this CRISPR technology. And then the child was born, and so they have to find out if he acquires the disease. I guess that would be the test, huh?
Right, that would indeed be the test, but I couldn't tell you what the disease was or what he was trying to fix.
Mm-hmm.
We could probably
The question here really is the ethics of what he did, but there's similar research going on this side of the pond, isn't there?
Well, yeah, there is, and there's a scientist at Columbia University, Dr. Dieter Egli, whose goal is to determine whether CRISPR can safely repair mutations in human embryos to prevent genetic diseases from being passed down for generations, So so you have a genetic disease, and he's actually working with one that causes blindness in kids, and so he's trying to see if he can prevent cut out the defective gene and insert, a good one. But he's not being condemned for his work because he is not allowing the embryos to come for full term, be implanted, and come full term into a human. So he thinks his work is different than the work that Dr. He did in China, from the point of view that, this type of work is okay as long as you don't bring the baby or bring the embryo, into full term into a baby.
So apparently there's a way to perform this CRISPR technology on an embryo and then not bring it to birth and decide whether or not the work was successful.
Well, and what he's doing is just allowing the modified embryo, for example, to live for a day, and then he kills them. Mm. So I don't know how many babies he's killed this way, but it goes back to the basic your basic definition as to when a human is human. goes back to this argument. And if you say, well, you know, a human isn't a human until, you know, the third trimester, or in this case, until the baby's born, not in this case, but I mean, you know, there are those discussing that, oh, you know, it's okay to let a baby that has been born die, because we didn't want the baby anyway.
Back to the Chinese doc for a second. He edited the genes on a pair of twin girls, or what actually became twin girls. He edited the back in the process before they decided, or before they began splitting and becoming human beings. The father is HIV positive,
and that's right.
And that's what he removed. He removed the possibility that was going to be passed on to the kids. So the kids were born, and they're both clear of HIV.
All right. So he actually, in this case, removed a segment of of DNA that would have passed on the HIV positive, gene, if you will. So he didn't insert anything. He just cut it out.
Right. Yeah. And in his words, he removed a doorway through which HIV enters to infect people.
Okay, so here's a question then, that we have two different situations here. One where the CRISPR technology is used ostensibly for noble purposes, that is to eliminate the possibility of disease in a fetus, in an embryo, and then the embryo is brought to birth, implanted and brought to birth. In the other situation, the embryo is destroyed after the experimentation is done. Is one more or less moral than the other?
Well, you know, from one perspective, you would say that, Dr. Yi did the moral thing by bringing the embryo, you know, to birth. Because, after all, you know, one definition is that when is a human? Well, you know, that, of course, from the Christian point of view, that is when the sperm interacts with the egg,
conception.
And now you have at conception. Then now you have an embryo, you know, to work with, essentially. So killing the embryos, and that's what Igli is doing. He's actually killing the embryos. You would think that there'd be more uprising against that than what Dr. He did. Now, in both cases, it's genetic manipulation, and we're really into some shaky grounds when we start doing this. What if you intend to do something, and something goes wrong in the experiment, and you bring the child to birth, and the child's worse off than he would have been, or she would have been, before you did the manipulation? You know, there's all kinds of, ethical questions related to that as well. So, in the other case, you would say, well, Igli is trying to perfect the technique before we go so far as actually bringing it to birth. But the overall, thing here is that, are you killing a human life or are you not? And so, since we've gone down the path of, you know, we can't really decide when it's a human and fully formed and all this other stuff. And in some, cities and states now, we've got these ridiculous abortion laws now on the books. It boils down to what your moral basis is. And if you don't have a moral basis, if you don't believe that, one, you know, there is a God and we are accountable to God, and two, that we are made in God's image, and therefore every embryo in this case is of value to God and is of worth. As opposed to saying, well, no, we just evolved and, you know, we're just animals anyway. So whether we kill, you know, kill a couple of animals, it's not going to matter, you know, that much. And by the way, this is done in the good, in, you know, for the good of science, and I'm trying to do something good. I'm trying to, you know, prevent a genetic disease in the first place, and so, you know, I should have the right to do this. It really is a sticky problem. It reminds me of Nazi Germany and the experiments that they were doing, and they were doing genetic manipulation and, of course, selective breeding, if you will, of humans to produce the Aryan race. And those experiments were eventually shut down.
Well, you know, this can go back even farther than that, to the 1830s and 1840s in Paris, and their hospitals and medical centers where research on cadavers was going on, much to the offense of most Western societies, where body snatching, you know, they would buy bodies, recently deceased people, to do experimentation on and observations and teach students about. It was considered reprehensible then, filthy work, evil work, and yet it led to the state of medicine that we have today. How much of this nasty, evil stuff should we tolerate, you know, for the payoff to come in years to come? And what justifies it?
Well, that's the point. What does justify it? You know, it's one thing to take a person who's dead and, you know, cut them open and to see where the heart is and the lungs and
but,
everything.
But in that time, in that period of history, that was obnoxious stuff. That was evil stuff. And it was outlawed.
Yes. Well, and from a religious point of view, of course, you know, if you go back to, you know, Jewish history, a dead person was considered unclean because they were essentially unclean. They were starting to degrade. So if you touched an unclean person, a dead person, that made you unclean. And then you had to go through a cleansing process.
And it wasn't just ceremonial. I mean, it was feared that you would contract the same diseases, the same literal uncleanness as the body. I mean, that's the original reason for that kind of a rule. It got exaggerated and elaborated greatly under the rabbis, but it was originally meant to protect people's health.
Yes, exactly.
Was that I don't remember hearing anybody bringing that up when Jesus raised Lazarus. Was that an element that the rabbis of the time would use that particular argument?
That goes back to Moses and ritual cleanliness, not and literal and ritual cleanliness. There were a whole lot of rules around that. The things you couldn't do without becoming unclean, then you had to go through a period of cleansing, maybe as long as a week, before you could go to the temple again, for example, or the tabernacle.
Right.
So it stemmed from that thinking.
That's ritual, right. But the raising of Lazarus and actually raising of Jesus, it was important that the person was dead for 3 days.
Right.
They weren't considered really, really dead, I guess, because maybe some came back to life. I don't know, unless they were dead for 3 days. And so Lazarus, you know, Jesus kind of waited around, if you remember the story, before going to Lazarus and telling him to rise up, to make sure that, you know, people knew that this was a true raising from the dead. And, of course,
Spirit didn't depart until the fourth day, but that even carried over into Western culture. And if you read your history from the 19th century and even before, people were so to speak, scared to death of being buried alive. And they even rigged up bells and windows and coffins and ways for someone who maybe regained consciousness after being buried to alert the people up above. I mean, it was a real fear because of the state of medicine. They couldn't always be sure. Maybe you were just in a coma. You couldn't move. Uh-huh. You couldn't respond. Are you dead? I guess that was a valid question given the medical technology of the time. Now, we're beyond that, hopefully. Although there's still cases where people are given up for dead and come back, medical ethics have come a long way, but now technology is a brand new challenge to it. And again, when does human life begin? I mean, I guess that's the crux of this whole argument. And it should be more sacred to preserve, even if it comes out diseased, even if the child is susceptible to certain diseases or prone to certain diseases. Is it ethically right to change his or her DNA before they're born?
Well, right. And this is really early on. I mean, this is shortly after the sperm has fertilized the egg. You get the embryo, and the embryo grows into a fetus. So you don't have a lot of cell differentiation going on. It's still, all the cells pretty much uniform, if you will. But even so, the question remains, yes, when is a human a human? When does life actually begin? Human life actually began, and of course the biblical view is at conception. Mm-hmm. Has always been a conception. We have some countries now that are actually they make it a practice to kill Down syndrome babies if they know that the fetus has got Down syndrome. And of course we can take DNA from the growing child and know what genetic diseases they may have. And in some countries they're saying no, you must abort this baby. So that in itself is horrific. And then I could see the drive to do experiments like this to try to correct the genetic disease so that you could have a better, a more whole child, if you will. But at the same time, this also brings back to me, Genesis chapter 6 talks about the Nephilim, when the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were desirable, and they took for themselves, wives. And they took for themselves wives, and then, of course, they had progeny, they had children. And, of course, we know of at least one such progeny, which was Goliath, and of course, four others, which were his brothers, that actually wound up coming through the flood. But a good part of the flood, the reason for the flood, was to eliminate the genetic manipulation that took place when the sons of God came to the daughters of man, and their DNA now was contaminated with this angelic DNA that wasn't supposed to be there. And so God wiped them out from the face of the earth, and ultimately, wiped them out completely. Some of the genetic, manipulation obviously came through the flood, through probably the wives of Noah's sons. And so that had to be dealt with later, but it wasn't a massive type of thing.
Apparent from that history, though, that God disapproved of such things, at least in that particular case. And that we should monkey around with that is a pretty scary thought. But another thought occurs to me, and we've discussed on this program many times how DNA mutations occur from generation to generation to generation, and that DNA actually degrades over time, and that scientists have been able to measure the time and look back in history at when DNA was in a healthier state, maybe even a pristine state for the human race. I wonder if this CRISPR technology, once it gets perfected and commonly used, assuming it does, would it be possible then to take today's mutated DNA and unmutate it, reverse the process to get back to an earlier, more pristine state, say, equivalent to a person born at the time of Noah. Does that sound too far-fetched? Or could that technology, you mentioned earlier, you cut out selected mutations in the genome. That would be pretty amazing stuff.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you'd necessarily be able to do that. You know, I don't know how specific the CRISPR technique is as to where exactly it cuts, and then, you know, you'd have to know exactly where the defect was so you could cut it out and then replace it with healthy or normal, you know, DNA, perfected DNA sequence. I guess the question in all of that, what is the perfect DNA? You know, what was the DNA of Adam, if you will, and Eve?
That's a critical question. How would we know when we're there?
Well, what they do is they take they've taken the genome of a bunch of people, and you kind of compare them, and you say, well, you know, looks like most people have this sequence, you know, for this segment of DNA, so it must have been, that sequence must not be contaminated with any mutations. So you do it kind of statistically and hope, you know, hope that you got it right.
You kind of get an average then, in essence.
Yeah, exactly. So would that create the, in quote, the perfect person? You know, I think all of this, God, you know, when man fell, God designed it for mutations to come into the system. You know, it says the result of sin is death. And so before the fall, man was to live, you know, forever in his physical form. So there were things in the Garden of Eden, mainly the Tree of Life, that helped the cells continue to divide and multiply and things like that, repair itself, as well as the environment itself that was that promoted life. So man was designed to live forever. But the result of sin was degradation, if you will, degradation of the world, degradation of the universe, and degradation of man. So these mutations that are building up over time in the human body and in everything, in animals and in plants and everything, was put into place by design by God for the purpose of dealing with sin. I mean, once sin entered the world, it was, you couldn't have an infinite lifespan anymore. You had to die because the sin would overtake you and you would become more and more evil as the sin compounded and compounded and your heart grew harder and harder against God. And so what you would wind up with would be just pure evil. I mean, it's the same, I see it as the same reason why God broke up the earth into the continents we have today from Pangaea, because man needed to be separated from each other in order to survive any period of time. Otherwise, we'd be killing off each other.
And I was surprised none of this happened to God's shock or dismay or surprise. He's provided for us so astoundingly. And provided the ultimate recovery, too, in Jesus the Christ. Getting back to this argument, now, there's another moral point to be made here, I think. In the Chinese experimentation, where the CRISPR technology was used to alter genes, and then the embryo was brought to birth and watched to see if the surgery or the technology was successful, that indicates a certain understanding that this life is precious. And you don't end it. On the other hand, the research at Columbia University, where you have a short observation period after the technology has been used on the genome, and then the embryo is killed, you would have to do that multiple times, probably, to verify results of the work. So you may be costing several or many human lives in terms of destroyed embryos, as opposed to the Chinese method where the life is ultimately preserved. There are two different questions here.
Well, that's what I say. You know, at least the Chinese doctor brought his embryo, or embryos in this case, to full term and to full term birth, and now we have two little girls. Yes, and there's no indication as to how many embryos Eagley actually did this with, or is continuing to do this with, because it doesn't seem like anybody is trying to stop him from doing this type of work.
Well, we're inured. We're inured to this, you know, because there are millions of babies aborted. I mean, it's all the same, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, just tissue.
We started down this path by aborting children in the first place.
Yeah. Dr. Don Clark is a member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website to you, creationmoments.com. You can link to it from the Broken Road Radio site. If you're so inclined, you'll find a wealth of information there about the biblical story of creation. Not just information, but scientific data, research, information, teaching that confirms the biblical story. And Don, as always, we're pleased to have you with us. Look forward to next week. Take care of yourself. Okay, have a good week.
All right, we certainly will. We got a bright, sunny day today, so we're looking forward to that.
That's a change.
All right. Well, some of us do.
David up there in East Dakota is still cabin fever is starting. That's
one of us does not. One of us has gray day waiting for more snow.
Oh, don't gripe. You could come south and visit us anytime you want to. You know that. Okay. Be good.
Okay. You're done.